ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife Tech. Nightlife Tech.
The global video games market is approximately $337 billion. Here's a comparison to contemplate. That is 10 times the size of the global movie business. Video games have gone through massive transitions. The days of Pong, remember that, on your computer to today's phone games. Announcements this week from Valve, that's an American video game developer and publisher and distribution company, suggest another transition's coming, and it does not look good for Microsoft. To discuss it all, Peter Marks is a software developer and technology commentator from Access Informatics. Peter, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thanks, Philip. Good to be with you.
So tell me about the platforms that games are traditionally played on.
Well, we've gone through an evolution over the years. Almost as soon as computers were invented, programmers made games for them. Even right back in 1948, Alan Turing created a chess game. And there were early text-only games. I used to play a game called Zork, and you said, you know, walk north and pick up the box and things like that. And they worked fine at the time. But it was when graphics arrived that games such as Pong, you mentioned that which is a simple tennis game, and Space War, they really became popular with the general public and with places where early computers were. So before home computers, there were games machines. These were little set-top boxes that only played a few games. You actually bought a machine that just played Pong. That was all it did. But more powerful games machines were available at arcades, and you had to insert coins. I fondly remember going to a games hall outside a movie theatre and wasting money on Galaxian with little aliens coming down the screen.
Space Invaders, yeah.
Yeah, all those sorts of things. They often copied each other. But look, the 1980s was a golden era for home computers. This was really the dawn of home computers. There was the Commodore 64, the Apple II. I had a TRS-80, and the ruse was that they were supposed to help you organize your finances or your recipes and things, but really people just used them to play games at home. In the 90s, 3D graphics arrived, and we started to get those first-person shooters like Doom and Halo and all of those things, and there were specially designed games computers which were launched, such as the Sony PlayStation, Nintendo 64 and the Sega Saturn, and games you had to go and buy them on CD. In the 2000s, Microsoft entered the field with their Xbox, and the thing was that only some games were exclusive to some machines. So serious gamers ended up having to buy several consoles because, you know, they wanted to get all of the different games they liked. And so for that reason, in 2023, Microsoft stunned the market by purchasing game maker Activision Blizzard for $69 billion US. It was an all-cash transaction, a huge amount of money. And that gave them control of popular games like Call of Duty, Warcraft, and Candy Crush. So the next big revolution in gaming really started with modern smartphones based on the ARM processor. And Philip, today, the biggest games market is on those smartphones due to the fact that players always have them on hand, so there's that engagement. And it's easy to spend money on things like, you know, jewels or tokens or extra powers or costumes or whatever it is, because there's a built-in payments system, you know, on the Apple or Google phones.
What about games on plain old Windows home computers?
Well, most home computers are not really equipped for high-quality 3D graphics, but they make up a slab of the serious gaming market. The console gaming market is about $45 billion US. PC gaming is about $40 billion US, so it's a bit behind. Apple, I've got to say, Apple's Mac OS has really missed out. They're way behind. They've had a few efforts over the years to make porting games a bit easier, and they arguably have good hardware, but they've really failed there. Still, it's important for Microsoft, I think, that there are lots of games available on PC hardware because, you know, the home computer is kind of a family decision, and the kids want to get a PC because it runs Windows, and it helps to cement Windows on Intel as being the default home computer. So it would be a pity, Philip, if all of that was about to change.
Because you think it might, because there's a big disruptor that's just been announced.
There is, yes. The fragmentation of the market, meaning with certain games only being on some consoles or PCs, has been very frustrating for gaming enthusiasts. So PC games, you've often had copy protection, which is basically installing some malware into Windows to stop you playing an unauthorized copy. And sometimes these systems cause problems. So one company, Valve, who created a game store called Steam, get it? Valve, Steam. They made it really easy to buy games and run them on PCs. You just log into your account and all of your previously purchased games are in the cloud and you can download them and you can move from machine to machine. And as long as you're only playing it once at a time, you've got freedom to move around. The Steam games platform is the dominant way now that people get games on PCs, with about 75% of the market. It's really amazing to me that Microsoft has allowed this to happen on top of Windows. They've got their own store and they've somehow been gazumped. Of more concern is that to Microsoft is that Steam lets you buy and play games on Linux, even though the games were written to run on Windows. They've made a sort of a portability layer. In 2022, Valve introduced their own hardware, a hardware handheld game device called the Steam Deck. And again, it's running Linux. It's not running Windows. But look, last week, the big announcement was three products, an updated Steam Deck, a desktop form factor Steam machine, which sits next to the TV, and a VR headset called the Steam Frame. And I think the headsets are going to be the future of those 3D games. The Steam machine is similar hardware to a PC, and you're free to do whatever you want with it. You can run Windows or Linux on it if you want to. But the Steam Frame, the headset, has an ARM processor, not an Intel processor. It runs their custom version of Linux, and it can be used standalone, or it can be hooked up to a computer for streaming games or watching videos. But Philip, the disruption here is breathtaking. This hardware and software runs games that was built for Windows on Intel, but it runs them without Intel and without Windows. I mean, this is crazy stuff. If this all works, it's really hard to understand how Microsoft has stood by and let this happen. It's a bit like what happened with mobile phones. They just completely missed the boat. So, Philip, the new products ship early next year. We don't know pricing, but it's expected to be pretty good.
All right. Parliament's tabled legislation requiring video streamers to spend a proportion of their revenue on Australian productions, which is a great thing for keeping culture on our culture on screen. But like the fragmentation of games platforms, it's expensive to watch it. What's the content and where can we watch it?
Yes, it's an interesting move. Our subscription video on demand, SVOD services, will be required to invest 7.5% of revenue in new Australian drama, children's, documentary, arts and educational programs. The streamers affected are all the big ones: HBO, Amazon Prime, Binge, Netflix, Paramount Plus, Stan, Disney and Acorn Media. Now, of course, in Australia, the ABC and SBS are still producing drama and scripted comedy that's available free to air. The commercial stations, not so much. But really, they're doing less of it, just in part due to the erosion of their budgets over time. It's been calculated by media researcher Dr. Michael Ward and film and television producer Sandra Levy in a letter to ministers recently that if you wanted to access all of the Australian content on the streaming services, it would cost you about $1,000 a year. It's a bit like the gaming thing where you had to buy an Xbox, PlayStation and Steam machine just to get all the games.
Is the content made by streams influenced by their origins, do you think?
Well, yes, there's some evidence that, of course, these are multinational companies and they're going to make Australian content. But what they'll do, of course, is they've got an eye on international appeal. They really want to make Australian stuff that will work in other countries. So I've heard the term, it tends to be Outback Noir rather than Redfern Now. The streamers, of course, headed by Netflix, have deep pockets and they can easily outbid local producers like ABC or SBS for outstanding local projects. So, yeah, it's a bit of a crisis.
Is there a solution to it, do you think?
Well, it's not just about the money. it's, you know, that they're setting a proportion of revenue that must spend. There's an argument that the current setting, the 7.5%, is actually pretty similar to what they're already spending. I suspect that the government fears the wrath of the Trump administration and don't want to, you know, trigger any counter tariffs or anything. There are calls for guidance on the nature of the Australian productions so that they're more hyper-local and not made with other markets in mind so much. But maybe we need a Steam platform for Australia where, you know, Australians can watch Australian content regardless of source. They don't have to, you know, subscribe to them all. Or maybe they should just, I don't know, maybe they should just be taxed rather than required to make it and give that money to Screen Australia or the ABC or SBS so the free-to-air stations can watch it, so Australians can watch it. In any case, we're also experiencing a digital viewing divide where increasingly, younger viewers mostly watch short-form video on platforms like TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook. We need to keep an eye on these big trends, Philip, or we risk, I think, waking up one day to find that our Australian culture has become irrelevant, rather like Microsoft is finding with games.
I strongly agree with you about that. I think there is a real danger of that. Look, satellite internet. This is the thing about the changing technology, the world we are in. I mean, I cannot believe that some years ago we were arguing about Australia launching its own satellite and getting exciting TV channels off this satellite. Heavens above, what a creaky old piece of technology that appears now, because internet users in regional and rural Australia have switched to Starlink for their service in recent years. No longer are we arguing about, you know, phone service, internet services in the bush being creaky because we can get them all from Elon Musk. It's growing rapidly. It is more expensive than NBN options, but a lot of people think it's better. A new competitor's coming, though, and hopefully a price war will ensue. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of people in regional Australia right now use and rely on Starlink.
Look, they've got over 200,000 users in Australia. It is a bit more expensive. It costs $140 a month, but it provides 400 megabits download speed, which is important, of course, for homes that want to watch streaming video or play games online. Many, as you say, many regional customers have switched from either the old fixed wireless or the slow SkyMuster geostationary satellite service, which when I last heard it had 45,000 customers, I'm sure that's shrinking over time. We've long known that Amazon was planning to do something. They had a project called Project Kuiper, after the Kuiper Belt. But last week they announced a new name and an acceleration of launches. They're now called Amazon LEO, as in low Earth orbit. So far they've got 150 satellites, but the target is more like 3,200. But Starlink is still way ahead. They've got 9,000 satellites up at the moment.
Heavens above. I mean, presumably this will be competition for Starlink, though, won't it?
I hope so, yes. I think it's unhealthy to have one provider like that. So Project Amazon LEO has signed up a few specialist users like JetBlue for airline internet, DirecTV in Latin America, and they've done a deal with Australia's NBN that presumably will spell the end of SkyMuster. During a test in September, they demonstrated download speeds in excess of 1 gigabit per second. Of course, that's with zero users, so it remains to be seen what it's really like when it's under use. But, Philip, it's amazing to reflect on, you know, when the NBN was being introduced and then scaled back by the LNP, they were saying that no one would need more than 100 megabits, and here we go talking about a gigabit. It's going to be very hard to compete with Starlink, who have a very smooth customer experience. The gear comes within days. It's very easy to set up. You can walk into a store and buy it and have, you know, you can be on the internet in an hour. It's quite easy to install yourself. But to use satellite internet, you do need a clear view of a fair chunk of the sky. That will diminish over time as more satellites go up, but it's really not for city folk at the moment. But look, Philip, hopefully with the entry of Amazon LEO and maybe others beyond that, a price war will begin, and we're going to be seeing faster and cheaper internet in the future.
Peter, terrific. Very, very interesting things to ponder. Appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.